Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Profoundly Pointless Podcast. My name is Nick. I gotta apologize right off the bat because I am struggling right now. You know when you're a caffeine addict and you're in that weird place, you've got a headache, and you're not sure if it's because you haven't had enough water or because you haven't had enough caffeine, so you just spend the next hour chugging both of them? That's what I'm kind of going through right now, and I just have a pounding headache. But I want to thank you guys so much for listening. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. It really helps us out. Here's a quick look at what we've got coming up.
You live and die and fight for that inch, but every inch that you get is an inch closer, and we live in the realm of slim opportunity. So day one, I went in, I had an audition. They were like, okay, well, here's his character. He's a little bit older. He's a father now, blah, 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 blah. Then we need you to beat the shit out of this dummy.
So basically, you would like to be a walrus.
I mean, I'm kind of a walrus. I just can't grow facial hair.
Came back and watched Star Wars. What are you doing? Are you opening a bag of chips?
No, I'm not opening a bag of chips. Why? Continue with your story.
I want to know what you're doing. Are you eating something?
No, I'm not eating anything.
What are you crinkling?
God, fine, I'm eating.
So for the second week in a row, we've managed to have kind of an underlying theme throughout the episode, and that theme is motivation. And we really got that from our first guest, because even if you don't immediately recognize the name, you know this person. You've heard his voice, you've played some of his characters because he's been in God of War, the new Spider-Man, One Punch Man, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. He is a musician, he's an actor, a stuntman, a voiceover guy, and he does motion capture for a lot of things as well. But having this conversation, what really stood out to me, not just all the stuff that he's done, but just his energy. Because I was listening to him and just getting motivated to go do stuff. This is Chris J. Alex. You originally started in music?
Yeah, I started in music. I had a little record label called Phoenix Entertainment, and I moved to New York with Case's co-road manager, and I was supposed to be a producer under there. It ended up not going exactly the way I wanted, and then we moved to, then moved back, did the indie thing.
Was that your first love, or was it just music just happened to be the first thing?
Oh, yeah, music was always my first love. I've always wanted to do music, and I still am actively doing music. It's just when I moved to L.A., originally I had two choices. I was like, okay, it's either going to be New York or L.A. I am tired of winter, being from Michigan, so I ended up in L.A., and it just so happens that, you know, the on-camera thing took off a little faster than the music, and I just kind of pivoted from there.
I saw in your bio you are Lansing, Michigan's number one record seller. Is that still true?
Hey, I don't know. That's been quite some time. So, yeah, as long as we get honorable mention, man, I'm happy with that.
When's the last time you saw a copy of one of those original mixtapes?
Oh, wow. I think somewhere in my house. I mean, I have like from a long time ago, you know, just a couple of records that I kept for nostalgia purposes. But every now and then I'll get somebody that'll hit me up on Facebook or something, and they'll say, hey, you know, we used to listen to you guys or something like that. So that's kind of that's kind of a treat. But as far as like seeing an actual record from back then, it's been a while. But it's been a year since I've been back to Michigan anyway. The last time I was there was for Batman.
Can you still find a copy of it? Like if somebody wanted to buy it?
You know what? I'm sure, because I'm pretty sure we set up like digital distribution through like, you know, CD Babies and one of those things. Actually, no, we didn't. So I don't think you can.
You made this decision to just kind of pack up and move and live in an apartment. Was that, how did you get to that? I mean, that seems like, to me, a kind of a risky thing at the time.
My mom, she was a musician. So, you know, she would always, you know, take long trips and take chances and stuff. And I guess that's hereditary. So long story short, me and my boys were like, you know what, you know, let's just go for it. I think we did all we could in a small town. Literally, I believe it was me, Rain. It was four of us. Four of us packed up, and then we ended up moving into this one-bedroom apartment in Hollywood. And then we ended up acquiring a couple other roommates. So at one time, I think there was like six or seven of us to a one-bedroom. But we were kind of used to the grind, man. So we were. It was just in our bones to just pick up and go for what we wanted.
I ask you about it because one of the episodes that we had that a lot of people listened to and responded to is we talked to a couple of people that they wanted to pursue their dreams, but they didn't have the courage to kind of do what you did and just pack up and just go for it. How did you make that decision? Like, how did you just say, you know what, I'm stepping off this cliff and I'm going to see what happens?
You know what? I think that is the absolutely hardest part of entertainment. No one knows where your next dollar is coming from. I mean, only 2% of my union works. Only 2% of SAC works. I've always, I really think it was something that was bred into me. I was fortunate enough to have very supportive parents, and just being around that and saying that there is no other option really kind of, you know, really kind of cemented it for us. So as far as, you know, going for it, I really feel like, honestly, entertainment is something it's so ridiculously hard that you hear people say cliche, like, if you can do anything else and be happy, do that thing. But if you have to do entertainment, then do entertainment. Like, it's so real, because I have a lot of my friends, you know, that that want to get into it or thought about it, that, you know, people that hit me up, and it's just like, you know, you have to fight so hard for everything, and you really have to be comfortable with enjoying the process, because you never know where the next thing is coming from. So yeah, it's either this or I'm gonna be the baddest bucket drummer in the subway. So there really wasn't another option. So I can't imagine doing anything else, and I think that's why I've able to have the little amount of session I have had, is because, you know, there is nothing else. And then if you go into a room, you do a job with that level of intensity, there's really no way you can't win, or at least the people not respect that process.
When you got to Hollywood, was it kind of, hey, I'm here and let's go, or did you struggle at first?
Absolutely. Well, it was like, hey, I'm here, let's get the ground running. Like, I came expecting to struggle. I'm going to go here, I'm going to get my ass handed to me, that's fine. And I had, and like I said, my first time, I moved out to New York by myself. So I was completely used to, you know, being a fish out of water, small guy in a big pond. And this time around, I had actually a support system. I had my brothers with me, and I had a couple of guys from home. So it was very easy for us to be like, okay, this is the game plan, this is what we want to do, and then go for it. But I was very much aware, like, I don't know nobody here. I don't know what I'm going to do. I saw a flyer. I got in an acting class, couldn't afford it, so I painted the walls and did whatever I had to do to just, you know, pursue my dream. And, you know, luckily I had a couple of different skills that was able to get me some dollars. Started off as a stuntman, and then I did everything, you know, from background and stunts to, you know, get to a point where, you know, all I had to do was just be in entertainment full time. And then, you know, but yeah, just I hit the ground knowing that, okay, this place is designed to kick your butt and, you know, take your money. There's no such thing as savings. You got to hustle. So that's kind of what we did.
Did you ever, were you ever close to giving up?
Oh, no. No, 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 no. No, yeah, it's like, it's really like, it's literally this or nothing. I mean, now there's times where, you know, when you'll come up with somebody and, you know, you'll see some of your peers, they may have a couple of wins, and then you might measure yourself like, man, okay, they're doing this. You know, did I make the right choice in pursuing it in this way? But, you know, there was never a doubt in my mind that, you know, that I would quit, because, yeah, that wasn't an option. We burned the boats so hard to get here. And you do have to remind yourself that, you know, once you come so far and you're running a marathon and then you're at the last 3 inches, like you're literally in the city. You've already uprooted. You kind of figured out how to do things, and now you know the game, and it's just a matter of getting in the right room. So you're at the last 3 feet of the marathon, and those are the hardest to run.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's right there, and you can taste it. And these little successes that you have along the way definitely energize you, and they definitely help you see the bigger deal. Like, I don't think, the average person realize how big of a deal it is just to say, hi, my name is Bob on TV. Like, just to get that job, there are literally thousands of people, and I'm not exaggerating, there's thousands of people fighting for that one, hi, my name is Bob. You know, not Leonardo DiCaprio's job, not, you know, just to say, hi, my name is Bob on TV, thousands of people are fighting for that. And they all look like you, and you have to go in and audition, and then you have to get approved by, like, you know, the casting director, then the director, then the network. Like, it's a lot. It's a really big deal. But once you start getting those little successes, you know, it's just you climb that mountain inch at a time. You know, if you watch any given Sunday, Al Pacino gives this great speech where he's like, we live and die for that inch. Yo, that shit is true. You live and die and fight for that inch, but every inch that you get is an inch closer, and we live in the realm of slim opportunity. So if there's even a fraction of a percent chance that it might help us to get our goal, then, you know, it's, there's no doubt in my mind that I'm going to do it, you know, so.
Is that kind of how you branched out into so many different things? Like, there was just an opportunity and you jumped on it? Or were these all of the different things that you wanted to do between the stunt work, the voice acting, the video games?
You know what that comes from? I will die before I serve drinks. A lot of that hustle comes from just finding angles. And, you know, you come in this town, everybody wants to get in front of the camera. No one wants to be the boom op guy. You know, no one wants to do that. And I'm not shit on any, you know, anybody that's, you know, doing the boom op job, but no one comes here like, I want to pull focus. Like, no, you want to be the guy in front of the camera. You know, you want to be that person, but there's so many people lined up to do that, and in the meantime, you feel like, oh my goodness, I gotta pay bills. So, not knowing where your tech comes from, a lot of people find themselves, you know, in jobs that they didn't necessarily think they would end up doing. I'm always of the mindset of, okay, if I want to do something, you know, what's the best way? Going back to that inch strategy, how can I get the next inch? Okay, if I'm an actor and I understand composition, I know how to edit, then it's going to make me strong as an actor. Okay, I know where the cuts are going to happen, or I can see it in my mind. I kind of have an idea. I know when I'm shooting this thing, I can play it a certain way. I can bring that much more technicality into my performance that, you know, that the people who know going to know that I get it. And, you know, it's film and TV is a very technical thing. It's not like it's not like theater. It's a different animal. Theater, you know, once a train pulls out of the station, it is going, come hell or high water, there is no cut, you go. So I think the purest form of acting would definitely be theater, or even, you know, motion capture, because motion capture is great, without trailing off too much. You know, but as far as film and TV, it's very technical. You know, you have coverage. You have to act like you're hearing certain things for the first time, but you have to hear it multiple times because you have different angles you have to cover. So it's a very technical thing. So if I'm like, okay, if I understand editing, that gives me an inch. If I understand writing, okay, I learn how to write. I learn what these characters' motivations are, you know, what makes them tick. take, I get into their psychology, that gives me another inch. Then I can communicate with the writer because the writer knows that I get it. In the village, and you just talk acting next to your director, you're going to drive people crazy. Like, there's very few people that just, that's all they do. That's normally the people that don't work. They just talk acting. It's like, no, you have to be a person first. You have to be something outside of that. You have to, you know, draw from real experiences. And a lot of people come here and they become a professional class taker, or they, you know, they involve themselves with the craft so much that they forget to be a person. Now, I'm not saying that it's not important to know your craft and then study and do all this. I am a proponent of that, but first and foremost, you have to be a person. You have to draw from real life, you know, experiences. You have to live. You have to, you know, volunteer. You have to be part of the human condition. You can't teach certain things like that in the class. You know, some of your better actors, they have lived a very, very full life, and they can draw from those experiences.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and that the idea that it's easier to pretend to be poor or to act like you're poor if you've actually been poor.
I'm sorry, can we curse here?
You can do whatever you want on a podcast a certain amount of times, I think.
But, you know, the thing is just like, it's different than like, oh, I don't have any money, but if you've been hungry and you couldn't eat, like, there's no way somebody's going to out-act your experience. They're just not.
Just because we're speaking about being hungry, I was looking at your Instagram. What's the deal with you and cereal, man? You got like 8 posts about cereal.
Oh, see, I have this, this is a great segue, actually. I have this thing on YouTube called Bootleg Cereal. And pretty much Bootleg Cereal is, it's just pretty much like a little interview show where I talk to people I've worked with, people who I just admire, and we just sit down and we talk. But yeah, it's just Bootleg Cereal. It's just a fun little way to just have fun and justify sit down and chopping it up with a whole bunch of the homies.
That's the reason that we started this podcast, was just so I could talk to my friends.
Exactly. Being an adult sucks, doesn't it? Like, you remember when you used to be young, you could just, hey, you want to come over, you want to play? Now it's like, you got to set appointments, and it's like, oh, I got to find a babysitter. Like, yeah, adulting is, oh, gosh.
What cereal are you going to say is the best cereal?
Oh, man, Golden Grahams all the way. Oh, I eat so many Golden Grahams. Or peanut butter Cap'n Crunch.
How are you going to go Golden Grahams over Cinnamon Toast Crunch, though?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, it's just a little too much sugar.
Not to stick on the cereal thing too much, but I've started recently, I'll mix a bunch of different cereals together.
Oh, yeah. You never got the same bowl twice, but it was amazing every time. But yes, I am a firm believer of mixing other cereals.
The voiceover stuff.
Yeah.
How did you get into that part of it? Was it just somebody recognized your voice? Did you try out, or what happened?
You know what's really crazy? Back when I was doing background, right? And I was trying to, now and I'm pretty sure people know what background is, but if you don't, you know, you ever watch a movie and you see those people walking around in the background? Those are actors. Those are background actors, and they get paid for that. And I was a background actor on a show for a little bit. And I was trying to get my last 2 SAG vouchers. Now, it used to be, you know, if you get 3 SAG vouchers, then you could apply for SAG and you can get in the union. And I was always asked, I was like, hey, man, you know, I'm trying to get my last voucher. Can you help me out? I was asking the ADs. And then one AD, you know, he was kind of mean about it, but he had a point. He was like, I don't give vouchers to actors who ask for them. I was like, you have to study. You have to do this. You have to go to voicebank.net and put over a voice reel and do other shit. It has to be a complete thing. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, well, thanks.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it. I was like, well, you kind of got a point. And then I was like, voicebank.net. So I went there, and then luckily that website had it had all the agents, and it had all the reels of the people that were in it. And then, remember, I was a music guy, so I had, like, bad equipment already. So I was like, oh, well, I can do this. So I did some voices. I emailed everybody. Osbrink was the first people that called me, and I've been with them ever since.
I don't think that kind of acting, the voiceover acting, the motion capture stuff, I don't think that gets nearly enough credit.
Oh, it's difficult. It's very, very difficult. In fact, I think actually some of the hardest acting would probably be like dubbing, like doing dubs, and like if you do anime or something like that, and it pays the least. The reason why dubbing is very, very difficult next to video games is you have to rely so much on your director, because contextually you really don't know the whole story. You don't know everyone's arcs. You don't know everyone's You don't know everyone's motivation. So a lot of the great stuff that you get as an actor goes out of the window. A lot of the times you're seeing that stuff for the first time as you're recording. So like, okay, here are these guys. This is their relationship. Blah, blah, blah. That's what happened, and act. And not only do you have to do that, you have to do that within the timing set by somebody else, and you have to match the – it's very, very difficult. It's the reason why you'll see somebody, you know, like a Steve Bloom, or you'll see somebody like with 500 and 800-plus credits, because the same people do all the work, because it's very demanding, and, you know, not everybody can do it. But the same people work all the time.
And when you talk about dubbing, you're talking about like the stuff you did on One Punch Man.
One Punch Man and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Like, yeah, that's called dubbing. Whenever, like, you know, the vocal track is released already, and then you have to go in and then you have to, do it in another language. Yeah, that's dubbing. That's very, very hard to do.
Because I do watch those sometimes, and I'll watch like the English version with the subtitles, and it seems like these don't
bless
match up. Like,
thank you. Because everyone watches the Japanese, but bless your heart, yes. Dubs are amazing. But go ahead.
I'm just stuttering. I'm not actually asking you questions anymore. I'm just hitting consonants hard. Like,
that's a lot of time that I do too. I'm like, I'm just saying words I don't know. Yeah. Same thing.
I'm a professional. I'm good at this.
You have a career, sir. You got this.
In terms of like, are you into that kind of stuff? Like, are you an anime, a manga fan, or was this just like, hey man, are you available on Tuesday?
I mean, One Punch Man was one of the few shows that I had seen in its entirety already before I auditioned. And then when I got the audition, I was like, oh my gosh, I really like this show. I really want this character. And that was like one of the things I was just like, I'm going to get this role. And I Zig Ziglar, Tony Robbins wished it into existence, and then it just happened to work out. But yeah, I was a big fan of that show, long before I'd ever read for it. And a gateway, like my gateway, my dad got me up on anime and stuff like that. Like, I think the first thing I ever watched, was like Dragon Ball Z. When it was on Toonami, and I was like, Dad, what are you doing? Why are you watching cartoons? You're an adult. He was like, son, sit down and watch this. You're gonna like, I was like, eh, whatever. He's like, and then all of a sudden I started watching, and I was like, all the way in. But yeah, my parents were always the gateway into the nerddom. My mom collected comic books, so she got me into that. I never read the comic books, but she got me into like the video games and got me into like all the this stuff.
I remember that old version of Toonami Dragon Ball where you could like tune in 1 week, wait 3 weeks, and then tune back in, and they'd still be doing the same thing.
Oh yeah, I actually met Sean Schimmel not too long ago. Actually, Johnny Unboshin introduced me to him, but he's the guy that plays Goku, and I would just ask him like, dude, because he would have episodes of just yelling, like it's hard work. It is hard work. And story about Sean, like, he knows his stuff. He's a full-on audiophile. Like, he knows, like, the specs of mics and stuff. Like, he's really, 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 he really, really knows his stuff.
Is that ever overwhelming when you do stuff like the anime or any kind of comic book-related thing where the fandom is so into it? Like, do you ever feel crushed by that? I don't think crushed is the right word, but a little bit under pressure, and like, I have to get,
you know, no, because I know no matter what, I mean, you're doomed no matter what, because here's why. Somebody, no matter how good of a job you do, no matter how bad of a job you do, someone somewhere is going to hate it, someone's going to love it. So my thing is, be true to the character and have fun, period. Have fun, bust your ass, and do the best job you can. And if I leave it all in the studio, then I'm happy with that, regardless of whether they love it, whether they hate it or not.
In terms of the video game stuff, do you think that some of those, man, they're better than movies?
Yeah. I mean, you see some of the Naughty Dog stuff that they do. Like, oh my gosh, like, so good. And I think, I think this generation, you know, we're in the golden age of like video game. Remember, like when there was a golden age of cinema. You know, I feel like this is that for video games. Like the stories are so good; they put so much into the world that, you know, Yeah, it's going to be. And another reason why sometimes they're better than a lot of movies is you're a lot more invested in these characters. You know, you sit down for a movie, you maybe get like 100 to, you know, 2 hours and 10 minutes or something. But, you know, you get invested in Joel for, you know, 40 hours. Ellie, you're really going to care what happened.
What was it like? What did you have to do to get ready to be Kratos?
Oh, my gosh. You know, the funny thing is, the first time I auditioned, I didn't know what it was for. A lot of these times, they'll come up with the title. You will not know what it is until, you know, maybe actually you're hired for it. So, day one, I went in, I had to audition. They were like, okay, well, here's his character. He's a little bit older. He's the father now, blah, 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 blah. Then, we need you to beat the shit out of this dummy. And, yeah, go for it. So, I remember this is like little Bob guy, and they had me beat him with some stuff, and I kicked him, and I just screamed and yelled and did some action and swung an axe around, like, more screaming and yelling and kicking the shit out of a dummy. And then I got a call. They was like, hey, you know, we like you for this character. Can you come in to Sony? So I came in to Sony, and then they was like, yeah, well, this is this character, da-da-da-da-da, and this is actually what we're doing. And I was like, oh, that's a big deal. And then, you know, conceptually, you kind of go over, you know, what everyone's thinking. And, you know, you go to a couple of production meetings, like, well, this is what we think of the character. And you meet with the animators, and you just kind of, it's kind of a collaborative process. So when I first got on God of War, it was years, years back. It was back when I had a TV show in Australia called Save Point. And I just remember, you know, us trying to find out, you know, how would this character walk? How would he carry his, you know, just wait around. And then I remember we were capturing some stuff, and this is when we found out that he had an axe. I was like, oh, this is cool. I was like, he's got an axe now. He's like, and I was like, okay, well, can he call it back? I'm like, well, no, we didn't really want to do that because we kind of we thought it'd be too much, too close to Thor. And I'm like, but that would be really cool. I was like, tell you what, why don't I just do the animation, act like I'm calling the axe back. And if you don't like it, you just chop out the second end of the animation. But if you do like it, it kind of opens up this whole can of worms. So they're like, okay. So we did a couple of things, and then fast forward to later, we know we recall the act. So it's really a cool thing when you get that early into a process where you figure out the character, because everyone's figuring it out, and it's something that you obsess over for a long, long time, and you put all this work into it. And then ultimately, the end result is, you know, hundreds of people with thousands of hours in collaborative talks, and you end up with this amalgamation of awesome. So that's kind of how we prepared for that. It's like, I didn't know what it was until I got there. I got there, and then it was like, okay, let's obsess collectively over this thing and make it awesome.
Were you a fan of that series growing up? I mean, when they told you that, oh, by the way, this is Kratos.
Nope. I went back and I watched everything. I never played a single God of War game. Until I got there, but I knew it was a big deal because I was like, wow, I play Smash Brothers, he's always in there, and I know he's a staple character, like that Crash Bandicoot, and it's like, he's a big, big, big character. So I went on YouTube, I watched all of the cutscenes for all three of them, and I watched all of T.C. Carson's work, and this is before they had, you know, figured out who, you know, they were going to use for, you know, the acting and the voice, which was Chris Judge, ultimately. But I had just watched everything that I possibly could.
Do you ever get recognized just by the voice?
It happens on occasion, but if I get recognized, sometimes it'll be like, oh, I saw you in this YouTube video, or I saw you doing this, or I heard this interview, and then, or I'll get, hey, your voice is cool. You ever thought about voiceover? And I'll just be like, well, you know, I thought about it. And kind of, like, yeah, but that's, I think when Thundercat comes on,
Can you tell us anything about that? Because, I mean, that was iconic when I was a little kid.
I cannot, but I will be more than happy to do another interview when it comes out.
Not to kind of go back into old, so like, if you accidentally reveal something, what happens? Do you get a phone call? Do they get mad?
I did that for Spider-Man, actually, by accident. What? if you look and if you see, like, Spider-Man and... Yeah, there was like a whole thing that went down. It's not this is a referral business. You know, once you start working and you get on the radar, you know, you really, that's a lot of repeat business. So, you know, you do everything you can to just, you know, to stay in good graces and, you know, not say anything in interviews and stuff like that. And you don't even talk about, like, there's several things that I don't even talk about that I'm on right now until actually released.
Coming up next, like, what do you got coming up next that you can talk about?
I've done a lot of voice work for Jeep, and I'm the Wingstop guy. Yeah, probably sold you some chicken wings, you didn't know it.
You are the Wingstop guy, aren't you?
Yes. Yep. There you go. Can't talk the back.
Do you get free wings with that?
You know what? Three people have asked me that, and I always forget to ask whenever I'm recording. But that would be amazing, because I love wings. Their fries are, man, have you ever had a fries?
Why aren't you, like, I feel like you need to get a better agent that's negotiating this stuff. You should have free wings for life.
Wing is amazing. Like, they've done a great thing. See, they got me money instead of wings.
I guess you could use money to buy chicken wings. I mean, I guess apparently you could.
Yeah, can't pay my rent in spicy Korean Q, but that would be nice. But I think the coolest thing that I've ever heard is my friend, who's actually a pro wrestler, he has a Chipotle black card. I didn't know this existed. Bro, man, he pulls up to Chipotle, he can get whatever he wants, how much ever he wants for free. Isn't that crazy?
Do you abuse that privilege?
I don't have it.
but I mean, are you ever like, hey, man, you know where we should go?
Like Chipotle? You know what? With great power and great Chipotle comes great responsibility, so that's... I want brother to keep his thing. I don't, you know, but... Yeah, if I had a Chipotle card, I'd probably be making it ring with guacamole. I'd be something.
Is Hollywood opening, and Hollywood and everything, do you feel like in terms of the diversity of different cast, is that opening up a lot more recently, or do you
absolutely.
Think?
Absolutely. Absolutely, without question. I mean, because just these two movies that kind of just shut everything down with Black Panther and Crazy Rich Asians, there's definitely a big shift going on. Even if you look at roles for women, you know, they're not as one-dimensional as it used to be. You're getting these really rich characters, really strong female leads, diverse, awesome cast, like, and it's a really exciting time. It's a really exciting time. So not only, you know, do we have the numbers to back up, like, yes, these people are underserved, they want a story, and they are willing, you know, to put their dollars where their heart's at. And not just that, it's just as an actor, it's really, really cool to just have a lot more opportunity and go out for stuff that's just not like, okay, it's not the typical thing, like, oh, black dude will be doing this. No, like, no, this is just a good character. And we just happen to cast somebody black because he was great for the role. And that's just awesome to me. So yeah, absolutely, there's much more opportunity. And as long as y'all keep supporting and putting your dollars and supporting, you know, movies that include everyone, I think, you know, just the experience for every movie goer, everyone who's represented, we're gonna have just a better time and a better experience and better stories.
I want to thank Chris so much for joining us. He's got a lot of really cool stuff coming up. Not just the Thundercat stuff. There's a lot of other things that he couldn't really talk about. He's also a great follow on Instagram and on YouTube as well, and has an amazing, a really good knowledge of cereal, which is something that is very undervalued in modern society, I find. If you want to connect with him, we've linked to him on all of our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Okay, so now let's go ahead and give John Shull a call. And John has had an emotional week. He's had a lot of things going on. And as his friend, I think the best thing for me to do is to try to just annoy him as much as possible right from the beginning. So let's go ahead and give him a call.
Hello.
Hit me with the fast five.
Well, and the good nature of it being the Black Friday remnants.
Hit me with the fast five.
Here's fast five. Black Friday attracts more people.
I wasn't really ready for you to do it. I was really hoping this would annoy you a lot more. I didn't think I wasn't prepared for you to actually be ready to do it.
So you're yelling at me to do it, and then you didn't think that I had anything prepared.
You outsmarted me, basically. I thought that I was playing checkers and you were playing chess.
You're damn right. You didn't remember that. Just remember that.
How was your Thanksgiving? Actually, I don't care how your Thanksgiving was. Do you care how other people's holidays generally were? Like, if someone, do you just ask the question because you feel like you should ask the question, or do you generally care?
I don't usually ask it, to be honest. I usually work most of the holidays giving our business, so it depresses me to ask somebody.
So you,
I guess I fall into that category of I really could care less.
Once again, I feel like there's this general pattern of you doing or not doing a lot of things basically just out of spite.
I mean, if I do it, it's like a courtesy.
Hit me
it's
with
like
the fast five.
What I want to know is this Facebook question that you're getting absolutely trolled and destroyed on about your toolbox. Do you even own a toolbox?
I actually do own a toolbox, mainly because my father-in-law, who is literally a nuclear engineer, gave me a toolbox thinking that I would somehow know what to do with it. It's actually, I'll put a picture up of it. It's a fantastic toolbox. People, you would be shocked at how amazing this toolbox is that I have.
I mean, didn't you have a story not too long ago where you were just trying to put in a ceiling fan and you like ended up busting out glass or something because it fell?
Yes, essentially, it wasn't a ceiling fan. It was a ceiling light that I was trying to clean out the little dust that gets on the ceiling light, and I ended up twisting off the entire thing and it collapsed. And now my son, who is two, looks at it and says, "Daddy broke it. Daddy broke it."
And yes or no, do you feel like to be a man, you have to know how to do household chores like that successfully?
You have to have, I think, to be a man, you have to have a certain level of competence.
Which you clearly don't have.
No, I can get something done. I have found from the amount of work around the house that I have been able to do is it's much more about having the tools than it is actually having to know how to do it. Most of it is simple. It's more of a matter of just being able to have the patience and the tools to get the job done.
See, I agree with you on part of that statement about the patience. I think that's the most important thing. And if you're not somebody who is interested in doing the projects, your patience level goes out the window pretty quick. I can like see you like on a ladder because you're a real little guy and you're like trying to reach up into the bowl, you know, you're like your little duster and you're going around and around and you're getting more pissed because your wife's probably like nagging you. You know, she's at the bottom of the ladder like, "Oh no, you got to do it that way," and you're missing a spot and you just jab it in there. Next thing you know, it falls on the ground and breaks.
Me doing any kind of home improvement stuff around the house is the single biggest cause of strife in our marriage.
Well, that and your baby dick, but we don't talk about that, right?
No, let's not bring that up. But so, like I mentioned, my father-in-law is a nuclear engineer, and he claims to be the guy who invented like the garage stuff where you build the little rafters up above, and he is very, very good at this from the engineering background. And so whenever I try to do something, if my wife wants me to put up blinds and they're supposed to be 7 feet across and I put them up and they are 6 feet, 11 and 3/4 inches, she's going to be pissed about it because it's not seven. And if he did it, it would be exactly seven. It would be perfectly level. It would not be half a degree off. And I'm half a degree off, and she just gives this look of like, not a man. And it enrages me to my core.
Listen, I met Papa John. He will crush you. His hand is the size of your body.
He's an interesting man, is he not?
He is. If I remember the first time I met him, I think he hated me, but that's fine.
I believe he called you a big dummy.
Well, I mean, that's usually the first impression most people get.
So getting back to this Facebook question, the question that I asked was, is the staple gun the second most useful tool next to duct tape? I would say it is.
See, I would argue that duct tape is not the most important thing in someone's toolbox.
But, okay, but in terms of, let's clarify this, because some people responded, Chris Gadd, and didn't really think this the entire way through, in terms of you can use this tool to do a variety of other things. Like, duct tape can be used to fix a lot of stuff. The staple gun can be used in a lot of different avenues. Do you, what? Okay, but here's my thing. If you're going to say the staple gun is not the second, or duct tape is not number one, what are you going to say is a more useful tool?
Well, you kind of changed the game on me there, and you said you said you're going for something that has a universal purpose for multiple things.
That's not changing the game. That's literally what I wrote on the Facebook page.
Like, if I'm going with the most important thing in a toolbox, it's a hammer.
But you can only use the hammer to put in or take out nails. You can't use it for anything else. The staple gun,
yes, you can.
You can use the hammer. You can use the staple gun, the back of it, as a hammer. You can nail in stuff with a good staple gun.
But with a hammer, you can use it for multiple purposes. It's just not for hitting in nails.
Well, what else? You're just hitting stuff with it. That's all the hammer is good for.
No, I mean, you can use it to, you know, I don't know what they're called, but, you know, the two pointy ends, you can use those to take out drywall, take out wood, you know, take out staples, take out nails.
You could use the staple gun and just bash the drywall.
Are we really having a debate over a staple gun right now?
I'm just saying, you're making a claim that the staple gun is not the second most useful tool. I'm saying it is. You don't seem to have any facts to back up your argument.
I don't have any facts to back up my to me, it doesn't matter what's second best, because as long as you have a hammer, you can usually get stuff done.
Did you know that the walrus's tusks can grow to up to 3 feet long? And the primary use of the walrus's tusk is not to attack other things or defend itself. It is to pull the walrus up out of the water and onto the ice.
So you're telling me that the lone purpose of a walrus's saber-tooth is to pull their fat asses out of the water?
Not the only purpose. It is the main purpose. Everything else is auxiliary. Much like the staple gun, which the main point of the staple gun is stapling, but it has so many other uses. Walrus tusk staple gun, very similar. Hit me with the fast five.
You know what? I'm not going to hit you with the fast five right now. I'm not, because I feel like you're setting me up.
Hit me with the fast five.
I feel like you're setting me up just to make fun of me.
Did you know that despite its size, the walrus actually can't dive very deep? Deep at all, can only dive to a depth of 260 feet and hold its breath for 30 minutes, which apparently is not very good for that type of animal.
That's insane. I don't see you diving to 260 feet and holding your breath for 30 minutes, though I appreciate you picking out a skill that plays into my most favorite superpower, or the one that I wish I could have, which is being able to breathe underwater.
So basically, you would like to be a walrus.
I mean, I'm kind of Emma Walrus. I just can't grow facial hair.
Do you feel like if you were suddenly to transform into an animal, you would probably transform into a walrus?
No, I think I'd turn into a bear, to be honest.
No.
But I wouldn't be like a cool bear.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd be like one of those fat, like, brown bears that, like, no one ever talks to or sees.
Yeah. You're not a bear is too high class, but maybe like a crappy bear. Like, one of the ones that, like, live in Kansas. If there's bears in Kansas, not a good bear.
I mean, what would you be, a hyena?
I feel like I'd be something annoying.
Yeah,
like a bird.
Like a hyena.
I feel like I'd be a bird of some sort. Hit me with a fast five.
I mean, are you serious?
I've been serious the whole time.
So if you actually want to do the fast five, I will read them to you right now.
Hit me with the fast five.
John's fast five.
Pew 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 pew.
John's fast five.
Pew 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 pew.
John's fast five.
My turn. My turn.
In a second. Wait.
This isn't gonna work while he's awake. You know that, right?
All right. So Black Friday Fast Five Edition. Black Friday shopping will attract more people than what go to Disneyland every year. There will be more people that die while shopping on Black Friday than will die in shark attacks every year. The original year of Black Friday, check this out, 1961 was the self-proclaimed first year of Black Friday. There will be 174 million people that will participate in Black Friday shopping. And number five, and my favorite, probably.
Wait, this was five? I thought that was all one.
No, this is Fast Five. Like, five fast things about something.
Oh, I thought you had, like, different topics that you were going to do. I thought this was all one topic.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, I did, like, different topics last week, and you said, could it be shorter and faster? So this week, I decided to stick with the same topic. But I got all kinds of cool little facts about it.
Do you know a walrus can live for between 20 to 30 years, but isn't sexually mature until the age of 15?
I swear to God, you're just setting me up to make me look like an asshole. You can tell me some dumb fact about a walrus.
I actually thought that the Fast Five was going really well until you mentioned that you were already on five. I thought I was looking forward to the other four things. I didn't realize that was all the one thing.
I mean, you told me last week to keep it, like, to make it faster. So I decided to keep it with the same thing. I'm going to tell you number five because it's the best one, by the way.
All right.
If you had to guess a percentage of how many people admit to shopping while drunk on Black Friday, what's that percentage?
27.
19, close enough.
Yeah, I thought I could see that's one of those things that I could go from 19 all the way to 50.
Yeah, so almost a fifth of all people. Well, I shouldn't say of all people. The people that were sampled in this poll, a fifth of them said that they are drunk while shopping on Black Friday.
Can I give you a quick drunk shopping story?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So back in college, me and a friend of mine, Ryan Brennan, I was going to a different school. I went up and visited him at the school that he was going to. We got drunk, came back, and watched Star Wars. What are you doing? Are you opening a bag of chips?
No, I'm not opening a bag of chips. Why? Continue with your story.
I want to know what you're doing. Are you eating something?
No, I'm not eating anything.
What are you crinkling?
God, fine. I'm eating, okay? Well, I was trying to sneak in some sustenance, yes.
What are you eating?
That's irrelevant. Continue with your story.
What are you eating? Why can't you tell us?
Because you're just going to make fun of me.
Well, I'm going to make fun of you more. Just tell us. The audience needs to know.
Some popcorn chicken from KFC.
Is it still warm?
No, because I had to feed my daughter, and then I had to deal with a couple of work issues. And this is like an hour and a half now, and all I wanted to do was eat my goddamn popcorn chicken. And I was looking forward to your story, and I figured I could have a quick bite. But apparently this fucking WhatsApp audio picks up every goddamn little thing.
So really,
now I can at least eat it. While you're talking.
Well, at least move your mouth away from the microphone while chomping down on popcorn chicken.
I have to admit, though, my breathing, you can't even tell that, like, I'm out of breath right now.
Do you get out of breath eating? Do you ever get the meat sweats?
No, I'm not that fat that I get out of breath while eating, though I have had the meat sweats. Oh, man, I have a good story. You tell your story about drunk shopping, and then I'll tell my most favorite meat sweat story.
Okay. So anyway, me and this friend of mine were getting drunk. It's in college. We go back to his house, and he has a ninja sword, which we start playing with the ninja sword as any drunk people would. And then he decides that he wants to sell the ninja sword, so we put it up on eBay. End up passing out while watching Star Wars Attack of the Clones. Underrated lightsaber fight between Yoda and Dooku. Anyway. Moving on, the next morning, he opens up his emails, and he's got all of these offers for the ninja sword. He starts responding to all of these offers. It takes about 30 minutes before he realizes that the bid that he put up on eBay and bid it up to like $1,000 was just him bidding up his own sword that he was trying to sell on eBay, ended up having to pay again for the sword, which he still has.
Oh my God. There's so many pieces of that story that are almost unbelievable. But so I guess my first question is, he got the sword back, right?
Yeah, he still has it.
Okay. We need to have him on because I want to know, more importantly, whose idea it was to turn on Attack of the Clones?
I think it had just came out on DVD, I believe. And some of the emails, just one of the emails that he was very excited about just literally said, "Sell me that shit, bro."
That's always a good like conversation starter. Sell me that shit, bro.
Okay, tell me your meat sweat story.
All right, so me and some friends, we were in Austin, Texas, visiting a friend to go hang out for a night. And on the way there's a barbecue place. I'm pretty sure it was rated like number one in America by the Food Network one year, called Salt Lick Barbecue.
I actually know of this place. Continue.
If anyone knows about it, I mean, it's literally like you pay, I don't even remember, 30, 40, 50 bucks or something, and you get a plate and you can just, I mean, they have any kind of smoked meat and barbecue you could think of. And I couldn't even tell you how much I ate. I don't even remember. I do remember, however, though, driving from Salt Lake to Austin with the window down, and it was probably like 80 degrees maybe. It was like a fall day down there, so it was kind of warm still. And I just remember, like, I was sweating, and I look over to my left, and my buddy Mark is sweating, and my buddy Dante, he was like a pool of water. And I just remember thinking, like, are we all this fat, or did, like, we just have that much food? And then, you know, with all the meat in your system, you have the meat sweats for about 3 or 4 days. They just don't go away, and they can be a nasty little critter. So that night while we're partying and we're drinking and whatnot, like, we literally left. We started drinking, and all of us, you know, we're like, we can't continue drinking. We're so full from the meat. So we literally got in the car and drove back to San Antonio that night and you know, just went back to the hotel because...
Do you know that a walrus's mustache, or vibrissae, as they are often called, are grouped in rows, and there can be as much as 700 of them in 15 rows?
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
All right, let's move on to our top five, and we're going to be doing the top five holidays. This is going to be ranked. So number one is the best, number five is the least. And look, we're not including like Memorial Day and Veterans Day and Martin Luther King Day in this holiday ranking, because those aren't really holidays. Those are more days where you're supposed to commemorate and days of service. So those are not going to be included. But what do you have as number five? What is your fifth best holiday?
So I'm gonna be the hopeless romantic here. And I'm gonna say Valentine's Day.
Why?
It's just a nice day in... You know, businesses buy into it, and restaurants buy into it, and I don't know. It can just be a. I'm sure we'll have different meaning now that I have a child. But before, you know, you could go out and, you know, spend the night on the town and do all this, you know, all this couple stuff, and you know, restaurants and do their things. I don't know. I mean, is it that bad, Valentine's Day?
Of that handful, Valentine's Day to me absolutely nowhere on, near, or anywhere around that list.
Plus, you're in like grade school and you get Valentine's? I mean, that's badass. Did I just stump you for words?
I'm just enraged in anger.
Well, what's your number five, walrus boy?
Mine's going to go ahead and be Thanksgiving.
See, I feel like Thanksgiving is an underdog. I feel like it's, you know, I don't have it low at all. Not definitely not number five.
You have Valentine's Day on the list and not Thanksgiving.
No, I do have Thanksgiving on the list. I think you have Thanksgiving too low on your list.
Oh, you're going to put it higher. Okay, I understand. Well, my number four is Christmas.
Christmas is on my list, and I can get to my opinions more in a second. Why do you have it at number four?
I just... My parents were always the people that, like, hey, Mom, I want this or I want that. And it's great to get a gift, but my mom would always buy me, like, pants, new underwear. I got things that I, like, needed for Christmas. I didn't necessarily get gifts. So maybe that turned me off of Christmas. Like, I got socks. Here's a belt. What's your number four?
I have St. Patrick's Day.
Ooh, I think that's way too low on that list, or way too high, however you want to describe it. I think St. Patrick's Day is much better.
To be honest, I've celebrated, well, I don't want to say celebrate because I'm not Irish, like full-blooded Irish that I know of, but on the occasions that I have gone out on St. Patrick's Day, I've had a great time. However, it's just okay to me, like, you know? It's a great, like, if I hadn't gone out and have the memories I have from that day, a couple of times with you, by the way, which were fantastic, I wouldn't even have it on the list, but I associate some good memories with that holiday, so that's why it's number four on my list.
What's your number three, then?
So my number three, which I wasn't going to put this on there, but then I thought about some of the memories. And I decided that I had to put it on there, and that's New Year's Eve.
Oh, my God, that's my number three, too.
Okay, fair enough.
But really, I feel that New Year's Eve as a party day is incredibly overrated. I can't think of any really, really fun New Year's Eves that I've ever had.
I agree. I've had a lot better New Year's Eves, like staying in and, you know, having like, you know, five or six people over rather than going out and being part of a crowd.
I've never understood the New Year's Eve house party. I'm against the New Year's Eve house party.
Why?
I've always felt that New Year's Eve is like you got to go out and you got to be around a whole bunch of people. The New Year's Eve, four or five people quietly drinking wine and talking about the best book that they've ever read just is not fun to me.
I quite like that, actually. I mean, that's...
Yeah, you would.
Especially as you get older.
Number two for me is Halloween.
Horrible holiday, completely overrated. I don't like costumes. I don't like candy that much. And I definitely don't like asking strangers for candy.
What's your number two, then?
Thanksgiving, for sure. But mainly on the basis that it's usually a day that includes... three of my favorite things: football, beer, and food.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. Although I just spent a Thanksgiving basically neglecting my family and found that to be very, very nice. Can you guess my number one? Because I'm going to guess that yours is Christmas.
You are right. My number one is Christmas, but not for probably any of the reasons you might think. I don't care about gifts. I don't care really about... you know, I do getting together with family. That's always nice. But the reason why I love Christmas is it's the only holiday outside of New Year's, I guess, that it's basically centered around the cold. Like, that's part of the thing that makes Christmas so magical is the Christmas lights and the snow and the cold weather. And
did you put up Christmas lights already?
No, and that's a whole other issue, Nick. I can't even get into it.
It is universally accepted throughout the world that the only time that is appropriate to put up Christmas lights is the weekend after Thanksgiving. That is when you put up Christmas lights. You bring them down the weekend after New Year's Eve. That is basically written in stone, and the fact that you are not adhering to it makes you not a man.
Did you put up Christmas lights?
Yeah.
Of course you fucking did. The first time you've done it in years.
No, I do it every year. I'm a family man, and I care about America. Can you guess my number one?
Well, I think I have it narrowed it down to two possibilities. I'm going to say it's either Easter
No, it's St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, all right. Well, fair enough. You are a short little Irishman, so you know, that's fair.
You know, I actually took a DNA test and found out that I am Irish.
I mean, no shit. You have blonde hair, blue eyes, and you're 5'2".
Basically, Irish people are stereotypically red hair and green eyes. So once again, your knowledge of geography is terrible. Did you know that the walrus's genus name, Odobenus, means teeth-walking seahorse? So that's going to do it for this episode of the Profoundly Pointless Podcast. I think that John has really been stepping it up over the last couple of episodes. He was ready to go with the Fast Five. And if there's been any problem with the show, I think it's basically been me. I'm the one that's right now is letting everybody down. I want to thank Chris J. Alex so much for joining us. If you get a chance, you can connect with him. He's really good at responding to fans, answers a lot of questions. You can find him through our social media pages, Profoundly Pointless. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We'd love to hear from you guys. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, and share. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. Coming up on next week's episode, I don't know.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.